Hello, Mrs. Gibb.
Hold on. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh. Do you get anxiety when you pop champagne bottles?
Yes.
I just had that. You just heard it all. I didn't know when you were going to get come on. So I just was going ahead and I was just stressing.
That was so fantastic. It reminded me of when you shook the redneck martini.
I think I should just not be allowed to have bubbles in my drinks.
Well, as we've discussed, bubbles in my drinks usually are bad news. But this
I didn't even think about that.
This bubble is fine, and maybe it's because it's wine, and wine is always.
Yes, my glass says Mrs. Gibb on it. Because we were being cutesy, but I will tell you that Mrs. Gibb is only Stuart's mom. That is it.
That is the only Mrs.
That may be
Gibb.
It in the world, actually. I'm sure it's not. Maybe at least in that area.
I feel like somewhere out there in this world.
No, it was goats. As soon as I said that, I was like, that's just completely incorrect. Sometimes I would do that in class and I'd just keep going.
I do that all the time. Yeah, I say something and then I'm immediately like, that was wrong, but just keep going with it.
Right. It's like me saying, I think that my mother is the only Mrs. Robinson in the whole world, and that song was just about her. So, no, his mom's maiden name, I'm giving you all the passwords here, guys, was Goats, GOATES.
Oh.
And there is a very, there's the aunties and then there's like a couple in like the west of America, but they're very limited.
Yeah,
I'm telling the story of the goats. not like the Taylor Swift goat, but like your family. He just walks in and has no idea what's happening.
Yeah,
he didn't expect me to start accosting him about goats as soon as he walked in the door, which is fair.
It is fair.
Hey guys, welcome to Theology on the Rocks.
Welcome. It's Theology on the Rocks, and we're celebrating with fake champagne.
Yeah.
Mine's fake. I don't know if yours is fake.
I'm sure it's not, based on what I paid for it. But I don't know that I've ever had real champagne.
You haven't? I gotta tell you this story.
But can I say before you tell the story?
Yeah.
It's almost like people like, you haven't known love until you've had kids. Guys, I'm sure this is true, but here's the deal. I've never had kids.
So
it's one of these paradigms that you're like, I'm sure you're correct, but like, I don't know how bad my sparkling wine is because I've never
Okay, so here's the thing. So my friend Amanda,
by the way, cheers, we're drinking champagne or sparkling versions of
sparkling, yeah, some kind of prosecco. Yeah, prosecco.
Ooh, that's sweet as hell. Sorry. That's real freaking sweet.
I know. Wow. I usually put a tiny splash of orange juice in it, but I was like, no, we're gonna do this the proper
we're
way.
Celebrating the Februaries
we're
in
celebrating
a multitude of ways, spoiler alert, but this week we're doing
larv. Yeah, no, so my friend Amanda used to live overseas. She worked taught preschool on army bases, so she, you know, when you work for the military,
said a top preschool.
Oh, no, she taught.
Yeah, no, I know. But I just imagine these little, like, young people, like, battling it out. Being like, we're the top.
We're
top.
The best preschool
in the
world.
I've also been watching a lot of Legacies, so that was what was in my brain.
So, yeah, so she made, you know, pretty good amount of money, and they paid for housing and all that. So this is the way to go, is to work somehow overseas for the military, but not actually be in the military.
Okay. I'll put that into indeed.com and see what comes up.
So she would come back. Our birthdays are really close together, and so she would come back and we would do these really fancy dinners to celebrate our birthdays that she would very graciously pay for, because I was a PhD student, so I made no money.
Rolling in.
We had
also, are you just messing up everyone's birthdays?
All the time.
Could it possibly be closer than me?
And more important than everyone.
Christy's birthday is July 1st.
July 3rd. Yours is the 2nd.
I'm the 2nd. Our friend Meg's is June 1st.
Meg's is June 1st.
Yeah. But you mess. So you're messing up everyone's. And America's birthday?
America's birthday. Who cares about that? It's our birthdays, Leah.
Well, some people do because based on my childhood birthday parties. Yeah,
I know. Every one of my friends is like, I can't come to your party. I have a barbecue.
I'm going to somewhere else.
Anyway,
but me. So
1 year we did a champagne flight thing.
Ooh.
And so we had a glass of Dom and we had a glass of Moet and we had whatever else. Anyway, and we were like, we're going
to see me.
Anyway, this incredibly long story, not at all short. What we learned that day is that we prefer Moet over Dom.
Is that controversial? Yeah. I don't know anything about this.
Dom Perignon is like the one that everybody's like, oh, this, you know. Anyway, but then when I lived in Glasgow, you know, Pete and Andy. So one day I took our other friend Sam in there and I was like, we need a bottle of champagne and Sam's paying for it. Cause again, she also works overseas for the military.
I'm a
PhD student. And so, and Smiley Pete was
I smell a conspiracy theory.
Smiley Pete was like, you don't want champagne. I'm going to give you something else. And he gave us this bottle. It's Cremant d'Alsace and it is so much better than any champagne I've ever had. So that's,
do you think it was because of that he suggested it was better, like mental training? Or
no, he was just like, here, give you this. And
I do trust him with my life. If my life were.
I trust Smiley Pete with literally every aspect.
If my life were booze related,
including your credit card. But Sam.
You can't just drop that.
Sam was really skeptical and she even agreed that it was really good and it was not expensive and it was amazing. It's hard to find though in the States. So
is it from France?
It is. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we had a real good setup there with Inverity. Shout out.
Yeah.
RP to Inverity.
Smiley Pete and Andy. It was this like amazing wine and liquor merchant that they did these tastings and you would go in there and they would just be like, you want some wine? And you'd be like, yes, of course I do.
Which by the end was pretty much just our friend group rotating in and out of
just constant.
I had my bachelorette party there.
I had a birthday party there. Oh my God.
We had just
so wasted every time I left that place.
And you could tell them what, like a theme.
Yep.
So like my bachelorette party was America theme. Cause no one, well, one person in my bachelorette party was American and all the rest were British and Irish, and so we did, but it was amazing because then they just curate.
My birthday party we did as a punk theme and they had trivia, they had punk decorations up. It was amazing. I miss them so much and I don't know, like, it's, there's just no replacing that, you know.
No,
you go back and you're like, now I have to just buy alcohol like a normal
they would
person.
Like tell, they'd give you samples and tell you about it and then inevitably you're going to buy something at the end.
Yeah,
but I mean they would give you probably a over generous amount of whatever they were serving, and they'd have jokes and trivia and stuff like that. Christy and I did it the last time I was back in Scotland.
Yeah.
And that's where I tried to pay
17 times
Smiley Pete many times.
We kept saying, oh my God, we have to pay you. And he'd be like, you already paid me.
And by the way, by me paying, it was Stuart paying. And I had his card and I just kept giving it to Pete. And to Pete's credit, I mean, we had been drinking quite a lot, but like clearly.
And then we couldn't find your card for a while. We were like, oh my God, where is it? It was in your back pocket.
No, it was in the. I knew Chris. This is how immediate Christy and I were friends. I didn't even really know her that well at this
stage. We had met one time prior.
That's great. And she said, you're staying at my house that night. And I hadn't even planned to. So I said, okay. And then just slept in the bed, woke up in a hungover panic, couldn't find my credit card. Was like, Christy was like, this is a series of you saving me at different things. I hope I can save you one day. But yeah, I was just like, oh my God, I don't know where my credit card is. Her roommate comes in and I'm just in the bed with Christy.
Yeah.
Just like in the bed with her.
And she's like, hey. It was a bigger than a king size bed. It was huge. So like you could sleep multiple people in this bed and not even know that
they're. I know, but I met you like yesterday. I know. We were
like fast friends.
Also, I just didn't. I don't care. No. So I just was like, whatever. And it clearly had taken my pants off, and there was just my life strewn on the floor with pants gone. And it was just such a like. And if this sounds sexy to you in any way, please rest assured it was not, because I don't remember going to her house.
It was such a good night, though.
It was so fun.
We would walk in, and I would just be like, hey, I need a bottle of red wine. And they'd be like, here's this, the best red wine you're ever going to drink in your life for, like, the cheapest amount of pounds you would ever pay for. Because they were really good at, like, you don't need to spend a ton of money on stuff. You can get really good stuff for cheap. And so I would just go in and be like, hey, I want, you know, X, Y, and Z. And they'd be like, here you go. And it was always super reasonably priced, not because they were giving us discounts, but like they were good at recommending the cheaper stuff. Then other people would come in and they would upsell the hell out of strangers. So.
Oh yeah. That's right. Or if they thought you had, I think they knew we weren't. Like rich.
Oh yeah, they.
So, I mean, I think they adjusted based on.
Yeah.
They could read the new money, old money, no money.
No money.
But the last time I came to Scotland, my friends there were like, "Oh, we'll have this get together in Verity," and I was like, "Yeah, cool, sounds great." And they're like, "What if we do a gin theme?"
And you were like, "No, I was like, not.
Do you know me? Like, you listeners on this podcast, wine
and whiskey."
You did, yeah, we did whiskey, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Scotch or American. Okay. I mean, I think it was just like the whiskey brands, whatever. It was,
yeah.
But it was so funny because I think our friend Rico was like, oh, like, we'll do gin. And Christy was like, yeah, gin. And I was like, absolutely. I mean, the people who listen to this podcast know that gin is not the right answer.
I didn't know. I had only met you one time.
Well, she should know better.
Let's play.
Actually, you know what I think it was? I think it was whiskey and red wine.
That's what I think it was, red wine and whiskey.
It was incredible combination.
Hey, this is the podcast where we talk about theology, you guys, not just our
drinking.
Our like, wild nights.
You can fast forward.
These are funny stories.
Quality content. Yeah, so we're celebrating February in multitudes of ways. Spoiler. And, but this week we're going to do Valentine's Day. And yeah, my glass says Mrs. Gibb, which is not real.
Hilarious.
But
you go by neither of those names, Mrs. or Gibb.
No. I guess I am technically a Mrs., but you I put doctor on everything.
Dr. Trump's Mrs. So.
Yeah. And I'm the Reverend Doctor, which trumps the doctor. What if I made sure to put Mrs. So I was Reverend Dr. Mrs.
Reverend Dr. Mrs.
I would be like,
you were like, you must call me all three times.
Please do respect me, guys. But yeah, I mean, we wanted something cutesy for when we cut our cake, and weirdly, Mr. Gibb and Mrs. Robinson didn't look great.
It didn't make
sense on anything. So we really like, and I told you before, I had this very sort of like, probably the only thing I will do that's like, what is that page where you save pictures? The page where you save pictures for inspiration?
Pinterest,
correct. It's probably the only Pinterest thing I'll ever do in my whole life. So like, this had to be. So I got a glass and that's what I'm drinking out of. This is good. And we laugh about it, which is fun. It actually has now become kind of a joke.
Do you ever use Stewart's glass accidentally?
Well, yeah, because I'm a trash bag. Yeah,
you're just drinking out of Mr. Gibb. Also, can I just say how disappointing it is? Like, that's not fun for him. That's his name his whole life.
I know. Well, and I mean, it was my name my whole life. We got married at like 35. Like, I was like, I'm not changing my name.
I mean, I get that, but like. You know, it's yours is like, oh, look, I'm Mrs. Gibb now. But his is just like the same thing he's always been.
I see what you're saying.
I just have always been like, this is so kind of sad.
Well, actually, all of our friends, and you'll know this because they say it, started calling us the Gibbonsons.
Yeah.
And that actually kind of has become like Mark our friend Mark will only, from Scotland, will only call us the Gibbonsons.
You could legally change your names to the Gibbonsons.
Yeah. I had a friend who...
I know people who've done that.
That double-barreled the girl and the guy's name.
They've just, like, smushed the two together. I know people who've done that. Yeah.
Actually, it's Stuart's mom, when she sends us Christmas cards, we'll put the Gibbonsons on it. Expanded out.
Yeah. I think whatever. I've sent stuff to the Gibbonsons before. Anyway. Yeah.
It's a good
last name.
Speaking of love.
Love. We're talking about love today, guys.
Love. Do you love love? I wrote about Christian nationalism today with a giant red balloon in my face, and I'll post it because it's real. I sent it to Christy. I was at a coffee shop that was just done up.
Red balloon.
It was just a giant, but this one, it was like an arch, but I was on the end table, and for some reason, it just extended out real far. That's what she said. And this is my romance for you. And it was just like, it was too much. So anyway.
Well, yeah. No, so this was your idea. You were like, hey, let's talk about love. And I was like, that's a great idea. And then I decided that instead of doing any kind of actual prep work for my classes, I was going to look at all of my books that talk about love. And I found these really great, but I didn't even originally think of passages in some books, and I posted them on the Instagram as well, but I'll talk about them more. But it's such a fascinating topic, I think. Not even
it is and it's interesting.
It's interesting, yeah,
because I think we overlook it. And
yeah,
I did a little bit. I did my level of research, which was very low, I'm not gonna lie, but I did find this from our friend of the podcast, Thomas Ord.
Yes.
Thomas. No, that's a YouTube about Taylor Swift. That's incorrect. I'm looking on my phone. Let's see. Where is it? Oh, I did see a Reddit that said, it was funny. It's the Reddit started, and we'll go back to the Reddit. This one was good. Lord, I can't find that. Dang it all. It's just pictures of me and my new glasses. Guys, I've gotten glasses now.
Leah's joined the glasses club.
I have. Now I don't have to Google this again.
Tom Ward, can you just
tell us what it is?
Just okay, in and tell us.
Well, this is one thing I did screenshot. It says, if your entire theology is God is love and do not judge, then you don't have Christianity, you have Oprah. And it's a quote that's attributed to unknown. it's on Reddit, so you know it's legit.
Oh, Reddit.
What do you think about that? Do you think love is trivialized by, because I read on down and it was like, it's become trivialized by Lefty Lucy is, and it's just about accepting everyone as opposed to like loving them and making sure their souls go to heaven, which is a part of loving them.
Well,
I'm, by the way, I'm not speaking with my own brain here.
Well, this is what I've been reading all day since we talked about this, and it sparked a lot of things for me. But I do think that sometimes we don't understand what love is when we're talking about it, especially in relationship to theology and to God, because it's not a just kind of passive thing, you know, it's a very active expression. And also when you're saying something like God is love, it also doesn't just mean a kind of passive, like God is hearts and rainbows or like smiliness. It means so much more. It's such a deeper understanding. I actually, because again, one of the ways that you get your seminary degree is by either tattooing Greek or Hebrew onto your body.
Don't have either.
So the Hebrew that I have
did some other stuff though that we can talk about. Didn't get a tattoo.
It's a Hebrew word for love that I remember when I was in my Doctrine of God class. We were learning about the different understandings of love that are in the Bible and that are talked about in theology. And Dr. Noelise, Dumème Noelise, he's from Haiti, was saying that this word meant that it was a love that would not let go. And I just thought that was a really beautiful sentiment, but there's so much more aspects to it, which is also why, like, we talk about the different words, different understandings. So I'm of two minds with this because, yes, I think it gets watered down, but I also think that it's dangerous to say things like, don't focus on that. Because I think if your whole theology is God is love, and you're doing like a pretty solid job of understanding what that means, I think that you are in a great place. And I think that you're doing Christianity very well. But you can't just be like, God is love, so I'm just going to like sit on my couch and watch movies. I don't know.
Just watch vampire shows.
Watch vampire shows or, you know, rom-coms or something. Like, that's not what it is. And it's also not that kind of notion of like just passively always being happy about stuff. You know?
Yeah. So I found the passage. No, I think you're right. Like, I think it definitely, here's guys, settle in for my rant against systematics. Here we go again. Round.
You're going to get a whiplash from the two of us. Cause all of my stuff is systematics, but it's fine.
It's fine. Well, here's what I'm going to say.
Yeah.
I think a lot of things, and actually a practical theologian who was maybe your supervisor, actually taught me a lot about this, is that the stuff that is trivialized and the stuff that is revered in systematic circles sometimes becomes kind of canon in the way people think about things as being soft or not academic or low academic or, you know, emotional. And this comes back to feminism.
Are you referencing the dear Reverend, not, and she is Reverend Dr. Heather Walton.
Indeed I am.
I have that book right here.
Because she would talk about literature, how people would talk to her about feminism and literature. Mm-hmm. Autoethnography is another thing. Like, mm-hmm. it was too much about the self and the feelings and all that sort of stuff. And this is going to counter everything that's in me, because I am definitely not a feeler. I'm a brain person and I don't like feelings.
Oh, same.
Hard messes same. With me. I like logging other people's feelings, but not necessarily.
I want you all to have feelings, and I don't want them anywhere near me.
I want them near me so that I can write them down and try to reflect it back to you.
I want you to have your feelings, and then I want you to tell me stories about them later when you're solidly over it.
And that's why we're ministers.
That's why I'm a teacher.
Right. But yeah, so she would talk, and I think she never said love specifically, but like, to me, I think that's what love is that, so my PhD, Dr. Grüvner, what do you call it? Doctor, because you know, the Germans will refer to their PhD supervisors as like,
oh yeah, that
the, their word. Mother, Dr. Mater, whatever.
Mater, yeah.
So my grandfather, supervisor, so my mm-hmm. supervisor was Werner Jeanrand, who wrote a book called Theology of Love. And he was a big time systematician, and you know, he was a German theologian, so he had all those things. He specialized in dogmatics, like all this sort of stuff. He was Catholic theologian. I think one of the first Catholic theologians at Oslo, which is like a Lutheran historically Lutheran. So he was like and I worked with him at Glasgow, and it was funny because I didn't know he was my theological grandfather. And when I worked with him at Glasgow, he saw me down the hall. He was like, granddaughter, with his arms cool. out. And I looked at this older gentleman and I was like, I don't know who you are. And you just called me granddaughter. And I'm pretty sure I've met all my grandparents. and you're not 900 feet tall, so I don't trust it. But anyway, but yeah, so he wrote that book, and I read it back in the day, and I just remember how he handled it was so what even the systematicians would call, you know, quite high academic work. And he was talking about love, and I think, you know, he took the sort of, he took all the routes that you would with systematics, but he made the subject that some people might see as like soft or whatever feminine, blah, 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 mm-hmm. And made it this kind of intense academic study. Now, did I understand everything? No.
Yeah.
Because that's not how I write. And I write, I like kind of like I'm leaning. I write halfway. Actually, I got reviewed in the Church Times, my book about theology. Yeah. And they said it read like two books. And I thought it was so funny because I totally agree.
I would also agree. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it was
not at all a criticism coming from me, but I don't know how they meant it.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I read it like, I have high enough self-esteem. I read it as, you know, well, actually when I read it, I was like, you're correct. Because the first part was like my Edinburgh head of like,
yeah,
this is my systematic working through of theology. This is how I got to where I got. And then the second part was like my practical stuff of like, here's where my practical brain comes in. And to really be skillful at that is if you can integrate those two, which is not how my brain works. I have to do like this and then this.
Yeah.
But he was really good about sort of doing that, of like mixing in the systematics with the practical, to the point where you were like, oh, like I'm reading this as a collective book. So shout out to that, and maybe I'll get there. Yeah. But that probably was my last sort of dip into systematics for a long, long while.
Speaking of, so I just wanted to read you this quote from Heather's book, because I think this is what you're also saying, but
okay,
she's going to be a little more poetic because it's Heather. She said,
I'm sorry, I'm not going to be offended by that.
No, I mean, who's as poetic as Heather? Actual poets, and that's it. So she's talking about
Poets Club.
With literature and theology, and talking about like how considering these, she says, well, okay, perhaps for this reason, feminist theologians have not demonstrated a great interest in interdisciplinary debates concerning the proper relations between literature and theology. While male scholars might occupy themselves defining genres and marking disciplinary boundaries, we have been quite happy to take down the garden fences and walk on the grass. One of my favorite things is like just the imagery of that. And that's, you know, what she does and what someday hopefully I can manage. But
well, I think the part that I have taken away from working with Heather is that we did not have the same interests. I don't do art. I don't do literature. Like, that's not my world. But I think what she did inspire in me is that idea of conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah. And being able to not do boundaries. Because I do joke around a lot that I'm a practical theologian and not a systematic. But we joke because the systematicians love to define themselves so heavily against everyone else that it becomes a bit of a defense mechanism.
It's a totally fair one. I think because
we're like, we know what you do. If you quote Derrida and Hegel, we're very aware. We just don't want to deal with it.
Well, anyway, back to the love stuff.
Wait, no, but I was segueing into that. Segueing my champagne way. Is to say that I think I actually think this fits with the love stuff, though, is that you kind of have to break down the systematic sort of, and in some ways the practical barriers, because I think practical theologians for a while didn't want to talk about it either, because when I read Werner's stuff, I was like, oh my gosh, like, I don't know if this is like going to make my brain explode or if I'm just going to dissolve into a bunch of candy hearts, like, it, you know, and I think that's sort of the point, is like allowing yourself to kind of dip into these things that the world sees as being superficial. Mm-hmm. And actually treating them in a high academic way. And I think love is something that, as Heather was saying, we need to just break down those fences and start, because it's so fundamental. I always think it's insane that, like, literally if we talk about the Bible, Jesus gets asked, what is the greatest commandment?
Love God and love other people. It's all of, and that's what I was saying.
That's like, it. That's the your sum. Whole
theology should be God is love. It doesn't mean you can be intellectually lazy and just stop there and again, sit on, you know, you're not sitting down and just being like picking daisies in the field, but.
Maybe you are, but you have a laptop with you. I don't know.
But you have a laptop and you're thinking really hard about those daisies, you know, but like, there's so many ways that we understand love, and then there are other ways that we don't necessarily understand love. But I think that when we're talking about it in terms of like, how does the idea of love affect our theology or our understanding of God, like we really should make it more central and thoughtful, because it would help with so many issues. Like God being love helps us understand God's actions.
Yeah.
And
the person I was trying to find that Thomas Ord wrote about, is, his name is Wynkoop. I may not be pronouncing that correctly, but
the W-Y-N-K-O-O-P.
Yeah.
Wynkoop.
Yeah. He was Wesleyan apparently. And he wrote A Theology of Love, and, but it was like 50 years ago, it says, but it says he argues that Jesus Christ provides the fullest revelation of who God is.
Mm-hmm.
Christological revelation suggests that love is God's reigning, but not only attribute.
Right.
And it says that he got a lot of flack for this, and because they said, oh, love is soft. You know, it's not defining who you are, and it's not very practical. And he said, when Cook counters this charge, love is not soft, permissive, a cover-up of human personalities. She says, love is the disciplining of human reactions.
Yeah.
Which I think is interesting, because being married, I agree. People always said, you have to cheese each day to love each other.
Well, you,
but
you know,
it's true.
It's true. And it's not even just like in that kind of a really, I mean, obviously there's a particular level of like day to day that you have that aren't in other relationships, but like if you're going to love anything, you have to choose how you're interacting with that love. Emil Brunner, who's one of my favorite theologians that I almost never talk about because he does other things, but
breaking down those boundaries.
Emil Brunner and Karl Barth were neighbors. My favorite story is that they lived across the street from each other, and they, like, because they got into a big fight about natural theology. And
I was going to say, did they throw tomatoes?
Wouldn't talk to each other anymore. And like, it was this whole thing. I don't know if any of that's true, but
I'm going to live in that.
I know, I choose to believe it. But Emil Brunner talks a lot about how we have to understand God through specific actions. And he says that one of those is creation, and that the idea of creation being an action of God is like a huge indicator that God loves so much that God was like, I am going to do this thing that is going to go badly. And I'm already going to set up a plan to fix things and then like reconcile, because Emil Brunner is very big into reconciliation, atonement, and relational Imago Dei stuff.
And I bet he's in my dissertation and I don't even know it. And I'm okay with that fact.
His whole argument is that like all of this stuff, so creation, atonement, the incarnation, specifically creating humans, all of this is demonstration of God. And then I didn't really get to use him in my dissertation. I really wanted to like wedge him in there just because I like him so much. But my original thought process was like, God, and this is what I end up arguing in it, is that God is so driven by love that God risks all of this other stuff in order to love us. So there's this sacrificial love, but it's not like I'm just going to like go through constant pain meaninglessly. It's like I love so much that I'm choosing to be uncomfortable sometimes, or I'm choosing to love you even though you're making me mad or whatever.
I was gonna say, do you ever think God ever stopped loving us because he got mad?
No, because I don't stop loving Penny when she throws her dog bowl off the couch and breaks it into a million pieces, which
I got to witness in real time,
which happened very recently.
You looked really disappointed about that bowl. I felt bad about it.
It's a ceramic, so it's shattered pretty badly.
She couldn't give two flying foos.
She thought it was hilarious. You know, like, yeah, you get mad, but I think when we let ourselves think that love is only ever like rom-coms or whatever, you lose so much depth to it, you know?
Yeah. I think the Old Testament sometimes gets me a little bit because God is a lot more, I'm not of the two God theory, guys, don't worry. But I think the God that we get portrayed in the Old Testament feels a lot more emotionally volatile
in places. Yeah, I get that. I feel like, that's a...
Not that God quits loving.
No, but like
God does, you know, blow up some stuff.
He does blow up some stuff. God's like, not anymore.
but I guess that's, I mean, I don't know. It's tough for me that because then people are like, well, it's the Old Testament. Jesus is the new covenant. Okay, well, no. I'm just not one of those people that's going to like wipe out. Then why is the Old Testament there just to give us a creation story? Like, I'm not a supersessionist. I don't believe that.
I also don't think that that's a proper way of reading the Old Testament, because I think it's taking away from the context of ancient times like that.
100%.
You know, yeah. Like the whole concept in a lot of ancient cultures was like, our God has to be super powerful. So God had to wipe some stuff out, or they would have been like, our God sucks and is weak and we're all gonna die.
Because like when God makes the Red Sea come back and kills those people, an argument you could have is, did God not love those soldiers who were just following orders? Like,
yeah, I just still think it's like, you know, whether
I'm not challenging Christy on this, I'm just doing my like,
These are real questions. These are questions people ask all the time.
Like midnights. These are my midnight. These are my 3 a.m.
But like when you're looking at ancient cultures, this is not my field at all. So I'm mostly speaking.
She's teaching on Korea this year, guys. What? So she might well be an expert on this, along with hip hop.
Like ancient cultures, again, like there was a lot of that concern about whether your God was powerful enough to defeat your enemies. And if your God wasn't going to defeat your enemies, then your God was not very good. And you should just start worshiping a different God. And not to say that like this excuses some of that stuff, but I do think we have to think about the context and the perspective that those stories were written in.
Yeah.
And realize that this was never about the Egyptians, and whether or not that story actually happened.
Yeah, like, I know. Yeah.
The demonstration is still God being like, I'm going to protect my people.
Yeah. Because I've talked to Jewish studies friends throughout the years and Jewish friends, and they're like, well, we don't know if any of that actually happened.
Yeah,
and
that's like, the thing.
Don't tell the evangelical Christians that.
There's pretty much no evidence that any of that happened.
Yeah. So. And she was talking about Genesis, but yeah. But like
the same with the Exodus. I mean, it's real murky and it's also very old, so it's hard to like prove some of that stuff. But again, I think that.
But even if it's like a story, it's an interesting story to tell about your God. Even if you want your God to be all powerful, like God in the Old Testament changes God's mind and is sort of like gets real upset and disappointed. Like Stuart, he gets disappointed.
He's not mad, he's disappointed.
Yeah, exactly. And just is like, well, I guess I'll just kill all them. And it's like, well, could you kill like, a different option? what if I come up with 50 people? Well, okay. Like, it's just a different, like, even if those things completely didn't happen, and they're just stories, I do think they portray an interesting perspective on God's love, because it's more of a relational, I feel like God's more relational in the Old Testament. God sort of fades to the background in the New Testament. I know that Jesus is God, but I mean like the figurehead.
Yeah. God, the Father is.
Yeah.
Well, I think too, that it's interesting how like sometimes Christians tend to then translate God, the Father into like the mean and angry one. And Jesus is saving us from God, the Father.
Oh no.
And that's a terrible thing to think. Like,
yeah,
that is wild theology to me anyway, but But it happens a lot because they don't know where to place the angry part. So it's like God the Father gets angry, but God the Son is like Superman keeping the big bad father away from us or whatever. And then you get like Augustine and his whole understanding of the Trinity being love, and God the Father is the lover, and God the Son is the loved, and the Holy Spirit is the love between them. And that's a
where do we fit into that?
That's an image
equation. Yeah, I know. My Baptist self squirmed a little bit. Mm-hmm. And do we just get pumped full of the Holy Spirit?
Well, we get to just be
pumped. I don't mean that in the British sense. The pump. I'm sorry, Grandma.
Like, how, you know, but I
it's think that champagne, it's your champagne.
I think the idea though is that like God, everything about God's actions is a demonstration of love in some way. Then it translates into like, if God is, you know, doing some stuff that maybe we don't even understand, still somehow it's loving. Again, not just in this passive way. I think that's really all I'm trying to get at, is this is not a passive love.
That's a hard one, again, from my chaplaincy years.
Mm-hmm.
That's a tough sell.
It is hard.
That's all I got. It just would be a tough sell. Like logically I hear what you're saying, but I just don't know like practically how that would work.
Yeah.
With people, like, because you and I both had shiz go down where we're like,
yeah,
or at least I have. Where true. You're like, where is God in that? Like,
where is God? What is God doing? Why is this happening? I mean, I think it happens in so many places. And I think that's oftentimes what causes people to feel like, you know, I can't do this anymore. Like,
yeah. If, and that's fair. Like, understand. But then I guess, well, because I lean more towards the mysterious, unsystematized God, I'm like, well, I guess we aren't really meant to know. But then that's not very satisfying either, because I did use that a lot in my chaplaincy world. I'd be like, I don't know why this is happening.
Yeah.
We can't understand everything. That didn't really go down well either.
I think the thing that I've finally fallen into is that, like, when we love something deeply, there is always suffering attached to that. Mm-hmm. And that it includes suffering on both sides. And so to talk about God loving us also does not mean that God is not suffering with that love. And that
Chrissy has been teaching Taoism this week, guys, so that might also
Because I've taught so many religions this week, my head is spinning. I taught Taoism and Confucianism and Hinduism.
You can't have the good without the bad.
Zoroastrianism and Judaism. Oh. I've covered a slew of things.
He's done it all.
I've done it all.
And all the isms.
All the isms. But no, and this, you know, this idea that suffering of God, then when stuff happens, I think the only thing to say on my part, how I've understood it, is like, yes, this sucks. And there's suffering and God is crying also. Like, just, I think one of my...
Wasn't that Moltmann that did the suffering God, not suffering God, what was it called? He did something of suffering. I'm just going to keep repeating the word suffering.
There's a Suffering God book, but I don't know if it's Moltmann.
It's not that. No, it's something about that though. But it's like this idea that you're not alone.
Yeah.
You're suffering. And that, you know, I think I watched a video today, Chris, because I'm having to do all this research into like Christian nationalism and all this stuff. And so there's this guy, and it was a video, and I'm not going to name drop him or anything. But anyway, he was talking about this idea that the only thing that I took away that was of logic to me personally that made sense was that God didn't create the world to be a place that was full of love. Humans, maybe, perhaps, but that the world itself was a place that actually was forever leaning towards chaos, essentially. And that his argument was that we are continuously trying to make things better through what he would call woke agenda. I'll just leave it at that. And that it's because we're trying to correct the world that is unable to be corrected because we've made the world a god. In essence.
I mean, that makes sense to me too, because I don't think that the world is meant to be something. I also lean towards the mysterious with this. And so like, I think a lot of times the answer is just like, we don't have an answer. And the creation stories are all trying to figure out how to make sense of a chaotic world. And then we're like, oh, we don't have to do that anymore. Yes, we do. The world is perhaps more chaotic at this point, honestly.
Well, that's what those students beside me were like. This one, I had some students sit beside me at the coffee shop, and somehow they immediately knew it's a professor. And
the professor vibe was strong.
It was strong. I had gotten my glasses, so that's probably why. I'm just going to assume those were like the anti-Superman, that when I put them on, everyone knows.
Everyone immediately knows.
But they were talking about depression, and this one young woman was doing her capstone in her master's class in social work on depression and K-12,
mm-hmm.
and how it's been increasing. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but this is what she told me. Like, yeah. The stats are increasing. And she was like, maybe it's just because our world's just really messed up right now. And I said, as someone who teaches history, I'm going to tell you the world's always messed
up. It's always been messed up. You know what's happening?
It's messed up in new ways now.
Yeah, it's different ways, but also we are pumping the messed up information directly into our veins. Like,
yeah, and I said social media probably doesn't help.
Social media, yeah. And having like 24-hour news cycle is truly terrible for our psyche.
Yeah.
Like, we need to not always be looking at the bad. We have to be able to see some good sometimes. Or yeah. You lose sight of what you're doing and what you're concerned about. And the idea that there is still, but this is what I think the creation stories are trying to do, is like, they're like, the world doesn't make any sense. Let's organize it in a way yep. that makes sense. And then they give
us what we have in front of us,
organizations. And we're like, cool. This helps me feel less out of control.
Yeah. 100%. I mean, that is, I would argue maybe religion at its core is making sense of the chaos.
Yeah. And I think that when we say, like, you know, well, like that post said, God is love is God's most defining characteristic. It's not the only one.
Yeah.
And again, it doesn't just mean that everything is hunky dory and lovely, you know, like you can't stop there. But you have
to. No, I do. Go ahead. Keep going.
You have to like think about how, again, like loving anything means an incredible amount of risk, you know, and
which is a good segue.
Yeah.
We've talked about love God with all your heart, but what about love your neighbor as yourself? What about that Eros love? As C.S. Lewis, who we haven't name dropped yet.
Oh yeah, C.S. Lewis. I mean,
and the agape love, I guess.
I mean, all friendship of that love. You have
Chris,
to.
Do you agape me? Now that we've slept in a bed together,
the agape gives me such like flashbacks. My life
to Greek.
To
there's a lot of agape. What?
Campus Crusade when I was in college. We had a Valentine's Day dance every year called Agapalinos.
Oh my gosh.
We would wear prom
dresses. That's a lot.
And we would go and we would eat dinner in the church, and then we would have a dance. And it was my
in the church?
In a church. Like the church that we met in.
Oh, okay.
It was amazing. I loved every minute of it. But anyway.
You're not allowed to dance in the Baptist church.
We were allowed to
dance. Another one of those.
It was a Presbyterian church, so it was fine.
My parents had their wedding reception at First Baptist Church in Ringgold, as we spoke about last week, and had to go to a further party. Sorry, Grandma. In order to participate in the reception.
Okay, I have to read you this quote because this is my answer to your question. Okay. It is from...
we can end early. That's good.
No, well, I mean, we're going to still talk about it, but I have this book. It's Feminist and Womanist Essays in Reformed Dogmatics.
Mm-hmm.
This chapter is on your favorite topic, It's called Scandalous Presence, Incarnation and Trinity by Cynthia Rigby.
Is she also getting pumped full of the Holy Spirit?
She's also getting pumped full of the Holy Spirit, but she's talking about the Trinity here. She says, to confess that God is triune is to know that God is for us in God's very being. To reflect God's triune image and relationship to one another, then, is not to lord over one another. To be godlike when God is understood to be a community is not to be self-sufficient, but to live in relation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, like, you have to love God, but then also has to extend out to loving other people in the same way that we understand God's love, which is risking things. And it's being, like, aware.
Yeah.
And
because in my dissertation, I talked about reconciliation from the vertical perspective being sort of the systematic stuff, like God reconciling God's self to humanity. And then I talked about it in the horizontal way, which is the way that we reconcile to one another.
Yep.
Because practical theology.
Yep.
But I think that is important, because it's like, yeah, the way I think, if you replace reconciliation with love, then that also works.
It's the same. Like, it, you can't love God and then just be ambivalent about people around you.
Yeah.
And
the controlling your or what was the word he used? Not controlling, but whatever your emotions, disciplining. I think that's such a good phrase, actually, even though it sounds a bit harsh, is that you do have to, I would almost use the word train.
Yeah.
Your human emotions towards other people, which is like, if you see someone and they are on the street asking for money, how do you react?
Mm-hmm.
You know, or like if you, someone pulls out in front of you and makes you really, really mad, you know, or someone says something terrible to you.
Yeah.
You know,
well, and
is it the same as the way you love your cat? I told Salem I loved him so much today. He's in his feelings right now.
Oh,
but is it the same
feelings?
He's really in his feelings today. That's why I was so late getting on. But maybe Sam's not a good example, but the same way you love, like, your spouse. I'll say Stuart.
You know what? Whatever. I love my dog so much.
I do love Sam.
She's staring at me like, why are you talking about me? But, like, that's part of it, too, is saying, like, there are certain times that loving my dog means doing something that she doesn't want to do, like taking her to the vet.
Yep.
You know,
actually, that's a really good example in a weird way of, yeah, if you think about God's love like that.
Yeah. Like,
it's the world we live in is full of fleas and heartworms.
Yep. The world is chaotic and terrible.
She's not aware of it.
Yeah. She doesn't know what's going on.
So you need someone to take that loves you to take you to the vet, because you're not. And I think that's actually a strangely good analogy.
Someday I'm going to write a book about, like, the theology of pets and how we understand God.
Christy, that's golden.
Isn't it such a good idea?
I am one and a half champagnes down now, but I think it sounds.
I think it's a brilliant idea.
Throw in some Dr. Seuss in there. Oh my God.
But we have to, like you said, you have to discipline your, because you can't just constant be like, well, I love you, so I'm gonna bend over backwards, or I'm gonna break myself for you, or whatever, because that's not really love. You also can't be like, you're hurting, but I want to watch TV instead. So,
100%.
You know, like, there's a lot of stuff about love that is not the pleasant, happy rom-com.
Yeah, like I told Christy I texted Christy the other day of something that had made me mad. And she was like, that shouldn't make you mad.
It was like, you're being so stupid.
Right, you're being real stupid. And it was funny because at the time I was like, what? I just want her to agree with everything. And then after I had gotten over the state that I was in, I was like, oh yeah, that wasn't that big of a deal at all. And I'm glad she said that. But I think what's interesting about that is love in a way.
It's, yeah.
It's just, you're just being like, it's not just about saying I love you a million times. No, it's actually about doing things.
Doing things. And it's doing, like, things that you know that person is going to appreciate. So I saw a post today, and it was like an Instagram post, and there was an article, and obviously I did not read the article. So I'm sorry about that, you guys. But
this is Professor 101.
It said, are the five love languages? Is like, are they useful? And then the little subcaption said, yes, but not in the way you think. And I was like, I should probably read that someday, but someday, you know.
Do you know the love languages?
I do. Have you ever taken the test?
Yeah.
What are your love languages?
My love languages are acts of service. That's not gonna be shocking. And I don't think it's. And not words of affirmation or gifts. What are the other? What's the other
there's
one?
There's physical touch and there's quality time.
Quality time. That was it. Yep. Quality time and acts of service.
Mine. This is gonna be the least surprising thing you've ever heard. Are gifts and acts of service.
But actually, I think reflecting back on that, like, I think both of those make sense for us.
I do too. Like, I think they both make sense.
Quality time is like my number one.
I think actually quality time has squeaked past gifts for me. I think gifts was like older.
You're good at gifts though. Like you're good at giving gifts.
I love to give. Well, and that's part of it. I love to give gifts. I just.
Because I think Stuart's would be words of affirmation and gifts. I think those would be his too.
I had a friend who was physical touch, and that was the worst, like,
compliment. I am kind of
I'm not good at touch.
I know. I hugged Christy for, like, honestly, maybe a criminal amount of time when I see her, if we're talking about consent. Because I know she hates it so much. And my friend
was that hugger, guys. Sorry about it.
I mean, you didn't grow up in the right place.
I didn't.
Go on and hug. I saw this thing about
nobody ever made me hug anyone.
Yeah, well, good for you. That's lucky. Because children were kind of accessories in my church, as I talked about last week. But like there, I saw an article that was like, let your kids have consent about who they hug. I agree with that.
However, I do too.
That was not
how. That is not how we grew up. No, like
it was like, there's your cousin's uncle, go hug him, and I'm like, why does he smell like chewing tobacco?
I honestly don't remember anyone like in my family. Really, a lot of my family members like to hug, but I don't remember anyone ever being like, you have to go give that person a hug. That was just not part of my growing up experience.
We're accessories.
I don't remember hugging anyone I didn't actually want to hug. I have made rules with all my friends now about how many hugs they get per trip, and it varies based on like how long it's been since I've seen you.
Does it though?
It does.
What if someone doesn't listen to the rules? This sounds really rapey right now.
I have friends who before were like, I'm going to break you of this hatred of hugs, and eventually I break them. Because
I'm just like a hugger at the beginning. I haven't seen you.
Honestly, I'm not a pleasant person to hug. I make it uncomfortable, and it's not on purpose. It's not
too bad.
I'm not great at it. So like people,
I mean, you go like, stiff like a statue,
right?
But I can make that work. Here's the secret. This is a champagne secret. You could wiggle. I think wiggling would make it, because then I feel like I'm actually upsetting you if you start to wiggle.
Sometimes I start patting people like they're about to burp.
But like standing still makes me feel like, oh, she's okay because she's just standing
here. She's just standing here.
But if you start to wiggle, then I'm going to be like, oh, she's wiggling away.
Next time you hug me, I'm going to start wiggling.
Just a little worm getting out of there.
Everyone listening right now is like, this is why Christy is single.
You're also like saying what people say when they go to jail for sexual assault, which I feel increasingly like I need to shut up. If Christy came to me and said, I really don't like you hugging me, guys,
I would stop. Were like they were like, I'm gonna hug you so much that you get comfortable with hugging, and I was like, you do that, you good luck. All of my best wishes to you, because eventually every single one of them would be like, you're really awkward and we don't want to hug you anymore.
Oh,
well, like,
I'm not there yet.
Well, that's good.
But I do have another friend, Marissa, who's like that too. And she's also from
Colorado.
She's from the North.
I'm just saying.
She's from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And I am just starting to wonder. Y'all ain't hugging up there. What are you doing?
Old, we would hug more often. No, but back to this love language, this thing. I do think you can tell the champagne is like,
I know it's going to my head. I can tell.
I do think that there's like certain things you also have to take into account. Like, I have dated people who really liked physical touch, and so I was like, and I'm not like that horrible to touch, but like, sometimes you have to be like, I don't want to cuddle right now, but they really want to cuddle, and so I'm going to do that for them, you know?
I mean, Christy, this is your basically your Tinder. So we're going to, guys, she really likes to cuddle.
Do you want to sign up to date me? I'm just so please, pleasant. I'm just,
she'll give you lots of gifts.
I will give you so many gifts. And I'll do things for you because, again, I think that one's my number one is acts of service.
I agree. Yeah. I agree.
But I think that it's interesting to think about like how we demonstrate love to people. Mm. And it doesn't always have to be a like I said before, sometimes it's taking your dog to the vet, you know, mm-hmm. and she hates it.
And also meeting some people where they are, even yeah. if it's not hugs, which you'd never have to hug anybody you don't want to go. But like Stuart's is words of affirmation, acts of service. And actually I would say physical touch probably is this thing too. Yeah. And so sometimes I have to discipline myself. Like today I went a little mental on him because I was losing my mind about writing this book.
Yeah.
And I just,
fair.
When I go mental on him, it's unlike anyone else because I start with the book and then it descends into madness, yeah. my list of things that are making me feel crazy.
Yeah.
And then I walked away and he walked away, which was probably the right thing to do. Absolutely. Although he tried to walk away to begin with. And I was like, why are you walking away? Is it because you think I'm crazy? And he was like, yeah. he didn't say anything, which again was the right thing to yeah. do. But anyway, I had to text him later and I just said, I love you. I'm sorry. Because that's his love language.
Yeah.
Are the words. And that's not necessarily my strong point. I could leave it. I'm stubborn enough. I could leave it all day.
Yeah.
And it not be a thing. But like, you got to kind of, again, discipline, yeah, your emotions and sort of say, okay, well, I'll meet you where you are mm-hmm. on that.
You do. Yeah. You have to, and you have to recognize like what are the ways I'm loving this person? And am I putting them in as a priority in my life?
You know? Yeah. Yeah. Like, I mean, I take friendship really seriously. And I think that's yeah, one of yeah, the things yeah. too, that's not a love language, but I'm strong on the agape. And so I yeah. think like, it's one of those things when I see friends that are kind of just like, I'm not going to say that. Not even the champagne can make me say this, but I just think people should treat friends to a higher degree sometimes.
I do too. Well, and I because I hate that idea that was popular for a little while, like if you're not gonna love me at my worst, you know, whatever,
yeah,
I deserve, like, no, you should try to be better for people around you. Like, we should all be striving to be good people towards other people, you know.
Yes. And I think there's a thing too, if you notice a friend or a spouse or whoever, family member,
yeah,
that's taking advantage of your love languages,
yeah,
I think too. I think it's noticing that and not perpetually being sort of, I would say, abused by
yeah
these folks. And you know, if they refuse to meet you where you are, then mm-hmm. I would say you have to take some action in terms yeah. of like, don't end up on Dateline.
No, don't do that.
I don't want to see you on Dateline.
We're not reporting any kind of illegal activities.
Just move out of that situation if you can, and if you can't, try to get help. I've been watching a lot of polygamous shows, but there's a lot of places you can get help.
So
I think it's interesting. I do like the love, although I did hear an NPR that said the love languages are actually not helpful, which I disagree with.
I mean I really need to read this article, but like
just the article that never was.
Like, vaguely referenced. I do think they're helpful. I think they're helpful in a lot of ways. If not for having people start to have the conversation about like, how are ways that I can demonstrate love to people, and how are ways that I understand that somebody else loves me? Because that's, I think, a big point too, is that like, we tend to not communicate well. And a lot of people think like, oh, if I'm just always doing the thing that I want people to do, they'll understand that I love them. But if that's not how they understand love, then they're not going to, you know, like if somebody is just constantly hugging me, I'm going to be like, please stop. Like this, you clearly hate me, you know?
I don't know what they would talk. Probably like just be disloyal to me all the time. And well, not that,
yeah.
sense of, like, just constantly disappoint me.
Yeah.
I think at that stage, I would be, if I do stuff for you and you just constantly disappoint me, I'm going to be like, oh,
this is done. Yeah. Like,
yeah, this is a lot.
Yeah. I think, but And again, I think this is coming back to that idea that like God is coming to where we are, you know, and that's the incarnation. God reaches out, God reconciles, God risks. And so if we're going to be love to other people, we're trying to be godly in the world, we have to do a lot of that kind of hard work too, you know,
and then maybe that's why people think it's such a soft and sort of easy term, is because we treat it that way when actually it's treated as like a spiritual discipline.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's like a spiritual discipline. It's such hard work. Honestly, loving somebody and being loving toward them is a lot harder than like passively being a friend, you know?
It's true. It's true. And I will say Christy is far better at this than
I am. I don't think that's true at all.
You're... I commented on this today and I will not reference the exact situation, but I was just like, eh, just leave it. Christy was like, oh no. And so I will say that like your aunties are works in progress.
Very much so. But no, Leah, I think you're a very good friend and I think you're very loving towards people.
Oh, thank you. I think you are very good.
Well, friend. Thank you.
I put off a demeanor of intensity. Same. That well, I'm a crab, so are you.
Yeah, same. But I mean,
hard shell, crab. Soft inside.
Mm-hmm. Yep, hard outside, soft inside. And like, I have we both have this strong sense of loyalties.
Mm-hmm.
And so.
Which helps us to be friends.
It does.
Because I'm like, I will drive to Florida to see you.
I'm like, I will drive everything and I will be there.
And if I don't think I will tell you immediately upon feeling it.
And I will probably send you gifts.
And I will tell you that, you know, I will try to muster words of affirmation, but I will definitely serve you
in so many ways.
How did this get? We were eventually going to get sexy on stage, but
we've circled back around, guys. So
we didn't talk about sex, which I did see actually in my very limited research that C.S. Lewis got in trouble for talking about the loves, because he did the what was it, 4 or 5 loves, because he talked about sex. And it was like the 40s or 50s, and people were on like the BBC, and they were like, oh.
C.S. Lewis was a spicy one, honestly.
There's some spicy stuff in here.
He had some spicy stuff in a lot of his work. Like, A Grief Observed is a much more intense book than I think I realized it was. There's a lot going on in that book.
I've never read it. I know that it's about Joy, isn't it? About his wife.
Yeah, it is. It's about his, when she died, and I read it, as you know, my beloved dog died, and then a month later my brother-in-law died, and there was just a lot of grief. And so I read it, and it was very good, and it was very healing for me. But there's anger in it. Like, he's really angry. He talks about grief in very, very real ways. It's very good. And it's also very short. So it's not good to.
I like C.S. Lewis's theology, and I think I told you this, I got made fun of that in my ordination.
Oh my God. I love his fiction. So
he writes very much like the way I write.
Because his PhD was in literature. Like, he's such a good writer. He wrote a book called Till We Have Faces. That's a revision of the Cupid and Psyche.
Cupid.
Mm-hmm. It is so good. It's one of my favorite books.
I should say he writes theology how I write, not like, actually he's a much better writer than me. But he
walked on the grass. He walked on the grass is what he did.
I liked Mere Christianity because I thought that was like a real, like, he wanted you to understand. That's one of the things that I don't appreciate about certain theologians.
Yeah.
Is like when they're trying to be hard.
Yeah.
Like, and I liked that he was smart and clever, but he wanted you, he was a teacher.
Mm-hmm. He was teaching you. He was a teacher and he was a literature guy. And I think that all of that is clear in his theology.
And I want to be someone who's seen as a good theologian, but also I want to teach and to help people understand. And I think, because otherwise, who are you talking to? Each other?
Yourself, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's tough. Screaming into the void.
Right. On that note, Christine, any final thoughts? But also, I have a final question for you.
Ooh, what's the final question? I don't have final thoughts.
Will you be my Valentine?
Of course I will.
I don't have the little cards. But,
you know. We'll give each other candy hearts.
Remember how we used to have those? Did you have the little cards? Like the little that you would put in
each
other's?
You had to give to all your classmates. I loved that.
I did too. It was really good because sometimes you get a special message.
Right. I know. Oh, I had a big crush on this kid from like kindergarten until fourth grade. And every year I was like, I wonder what he's going to write in my Valentine. It was almost always disappointing. Sometimes he would write nice things. We were friends too. So it was like.
Where did he end up? Can we find him? Do we need to go get him? Whose car are we taking?
He has the most like standard name ever that there's absolutely no way to ever find him. Because the last time I saw this person was in fourth grade. So who knows what he looks like.
Tough sell. But guys, we're on a mission for love.
We're on a mission. I'm not saying his name though.
I'm two champagnes down and I'm ready for it.
All right. Dear.
All right.
Everybody, love you. Happy Valentine's Day.
Love you. We love you with agape. I'm still good. Okay.
Agape love.
She might love you with eros. I might love the Holy Spirit with eros
based on this conversation. I love you with the Hebrew word that's tattooed on my foot.
There we go.
It's a hava.
Which means what?
Which means love.
Oh.
Love.
Is all you need.
It's right next to an orange whale, so people think I love Jonah, but it's fine.
Somebody needs to. Lord. Upward kid. All right. Peace out, guys.
Bye.
Bye.